It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
The raid on the president's personal attorney, Michael Cohen's two offices, his residence, and his temporary hotel room represents a steep escalation of the Russia investigation by the Justice Department, one that President Trump has taken as a personal affront and left uncertain what he plans to do next.
Thank you very much, everybody.
Asked again whether President Trump had any thoughts or intentions about firing Robert Mueller, for the first time today, the press secretary did not issue a denial.
You've said several times from the podium that the president has neither the intention nor is thinking about firing Robert Mueller. Does that remain the case today?
The president was asked this question directly last night, and I'd refer you back to his comments.
What the president said last night was sharply different than what he has said in the past when he has insisted he was not going to fire Mueller.
Why don't I just fire Mueller? Well, I think it's a disgrace what's going on. We'll see what happens.
Sources close to the president say they don't believe he'll fire Mueller. Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Chuck Grassley today said it would be a terrible idea.
It would be suicide for the president to want to talk about firing Mueller.
But in the event President Trump wanted to fire Mueller, the White House made it clear.
He has the power to do so, but I don't have any further announcements.
No question. The president is livid about the FBI raids on his personal attorney, Michael Cohen. Sources say the FBI took everything in Cohen's possession, including privileged documents and communications, computers and cell phones. President Trump warned last year that Robert Mueller's investigation should not stray outside its mandate.
It's an attack on our country in a true sense. It's an attack on what we all stand for.
To hear the press secretary tell it, President Trump now believes Mueller has crossed a line.
The president has been clear that he thinks that this has gone too far.
That's part one of John Roberts' report last night on Fox. Sandy Rios with you this morning. Yeah, we're learning more about that raid that happened, Sunday? Sunday morning? Sunday night? I get this confused, but it's just been within the last 48 hours on President Trump's private attorney. My understanding is that they knocked at the door, and just as soon as it was opened, they took the cell phone out of Michael Cohen's hand, took all of his tax records, everything, raided his home, the hotel room where his family was staying because they were having some work done on their house, his office, and it seems like there was a fourth place, just taking everything and all of his information, all of his connections with President Trump, which, of course, violates, as Alan Dershowitz is shouting from the housetops, the client-attorney privilege. It doesn't just violate that. You know, I think we do forget about constitutional rights, and there are some constitutional rights here involved in this. There's the right against search and seizure. You cannot, the government cannot, the Fourth Amendment, okay, it says unreasonable searches and seizures by the government. We're protected from that. We can't just have a knock at the door and then have federal authorities come in and take everything that we have unless they have a really good reason. Dershowitz maintains that and nothing that they took from Cohen could not have been subpoenaed. It could have been asked for. It could have been sought. He was cooperating with authorities. There was no reason for them to do this. And I think it's a very big deal. I think Alan Dershowitz would agree. In fact, Alan Dershowitz, who's the Harvard law professor, who is no conservative. You know, he's talking more like a conservative now, but trust me, he used to be a rabid defender of the Clintons. He used to make me so angry many years ago. And now, of course, I would say this, in spite of that, as I described to you yesterday, but it's worth repeating, Alan Dershowitz was an attorney on the far left who I think was still, he was genuinely left in terms of his personal passions and beliefs. But he also had has a kind of an affinity for truth. And he felt that Roe versus Wade was a terrible law, wrongly decided. There was no allowance for abortion for all 9 months in the Constitution, and he said so, and that was radical. And so he's being radical now, too, breaking from his ranks to defend Michael Cohen, the president's attorney at this time. Pretty upset about it. There's more down in the weeds of this. They talk about taint teams, about who's going to see the information. And the claim is, of course, that this information is going to be vetted by someone objective. Well, of course, it's not. How can we believe that? How can we believe that, given what we've seen happen with the FBI and the Justice Department? Really? And how can we believe that there would not be, you know, supposedly they're trustworthy and it won't be seen unless it's relevant? Have we not seen like a few leaks from Justice and FBI in the last few years? You think that there's something, if there's something in there that has any hint of impropriety, we're not going to hear about this? Yeah, I don't have that kind of faith. And so that's kind of the update on that, but there's more. Michael Cohen did an interview with CNN, interestingly enough, yesterday, and he said, "I am unhappy to have my personal residence and office raided, but I will tell you that members of the FBI that conducted the search and seizure were all extremely professional, courteous, and respectful, and I thank them at that conclusion." Asked if he was worried, Cohen said, "I would be lying to you if I told you that I am not. Do I need this in my life? No. Do I want to be involved in this? No." He acknowledged that the raids and attention, this is from CNN.com, "the raids and attention have had an impact on his family. He wants the investigation to be over and continues to say everything he did in regards to paying Stormy Daniels for the non-disclosure agreement was perfectly legal, which brings me to the second part of John Roberts' report. Let's listen.
The Senate Minority Leader heaped criticism on the president's complaints today, insisting the raid was signed off on by a number of officials who President Trump appointed.
If President Trump believes this to be a partisan conspiracy, he once again ignores the fact that every major player is a Republican.
It's still unclear what the FBI was looking for. Bank fraud regarding the payment to Stormy Daniels has been suggested. Sources tell Fox News Cohen paid Daniels from an existing home equity line of credit and that he didn't need to tell the bank what the money was for. The $130,000 was then transferred to an LLC solely owned by Cohen and from there wired to an attorney in Beverly Hills. President Trump denies any knowledge of the transaction.
Did you know about the $130,000 payment to Stormy Daniels?
Well, there's more to that story. And, of course, we talked about Stormy Daniels yesterday. I haven't said much about her. I've been, you know, some people online who are not on the same team have been critical of that. You know, I just feel like that's a very salacious story. And I feel like Stormy Daniels is not exactly an innocent in all of this. She's a porn star, for heaven's sake, and she's making millions, I don't know, hundreds of thousands, I'll say that, off of this story. It allegedly happened 12 years ago. It was a one-night stand. I mean, it might have happened. I wouldn't defend the president on that. He has lived a pretty wild life sexually. He's had several wives, several children, and he hasn't really lied about any of that. He's been pretty open about that. My point is not to defend him on that, but it was 12 years ago. I do think I know I'm repeating myself, but I have to. I think he's a man that's changed. I really do. I also say this gets to the understanding of Christian teaching, because so many attack Christians, including me, and that's fine. I don't mind. Listen, if I can't defend my position, then I don't want to hold it. So I actually don't mind the challenges or the attacks. I'm used to them. You have to understand that the standard for Christians and who they, how they regard people's behavior is very different when people are followers of Christ and when they are not. We understand that those that have not been forgiven and redeemed, turned their life over to the service of the one true God by acknowledging that his son Jesus, live immoral lives. They just do. That's their nature. That's our nature, too. We were saved from that. That's what it means to be saved. We made a choice and turned our lives around and decided to follow Jesus and to accept with that the boundaries, the sexual boundaries that God has laid down. So people that walk outside of those parameters, we don't expect them to. We don't have that expectation. So if you ask me why I can support Donald Trump, it's because He was an immoral man who never claimed to be more than that, really. But I do think he has changed. I really do. I mean, time will tell. And I can't make any bold claims about that. But it's Bill Clinton, you know, claimed to be a follower of Jesus, carried his big Bible into church on Sundays. That's intolerable for the Christian. To have someone who claims the name of Jesus and then lives the opposite way, or, you know, boldly acts out sexually without any kind of restraint or in remorse, then that's not acceptable. We just don't accept that. And so we're talking about apples and oranges here. But this raid, it looks like, from all accounts, from John Roberts' report just then and what I'm reading, a lot of it was about this payment to Stormy Daniels, $130,000. They're claiming it was bank fraud. Well, it was a home equity loan. This is what we're hearing. It was a home equity loan that Michael Cohen just took $130,000 out and gave it to the contact people for Stormy Daniels. I don't, you know, if you get a line of credit on your home equity loan, I honestly don't think you have to give permission either or give the bank information about that, do you? I don't think so. I think you get a line of credit based on the value of your house, and then you spend it as you need it on whatever it is you're doing. So now they're calling that a campaign contribution to President Trump. You know, that is such a minor, if that's the case. Let's say Michael Cohen's absolutely telling the truth. He paid the money himself out of his personal home equity loan, $130,000. And now they are claiming, but then when you did that, that was in effect a campaign contribution to Donald Trump, and it exceeds the limits. Now, let's assume that's all true. Is that a crime for which a person's his home can be invaded, his phone taken, all of his records, his tax records, his rights thrown out the window? Really? Could that not be settled another way? So I'm just saying. And then there's another porn star that was allegedly paid, former Playboy model, not a porn star, Karen McDougal. No, I'm not sure. You know, we could debate the definitions there, but she said she had an affair with Trump in 2006. So that's 12 years ago. And they think that she was paid $150,000. So that's part of what they're looking for. This is what they're, this, weren't we, aren't we talking about a president who, weren't we discussing a president who allegedly paid, you know, got money from the Russian government, did all these deals with the Russians to help them beat Hillary Clinton because she was, by all accounts, such a fabulous candidate, as we all know. And he did not win. He couldn't possibly have won on his own merit. His own campaign, you know, promises on the trail didn't really resonate with people. They just got confused because they were being influenced by Russian bots. That's kind of the way we're being told about this. So, but the thing they're actually now looking for are whether a home equity loan, which was used to pay off Stormy Daniels from making, you know, talking publicly about a one-night stand with the president 12 years ago, right before the 2016 election, that's the thing that's got them all chafed, so that they would abuse this man's rights and the president, really disrespect the president in this way. It's pretty amazing. We think now, we know pretty much for a fact that Rod Rosenstein is the one who personally approved these raids. And we also probably have it in good authority that the president is contemplating how to get rid of Rod Rosenstein. I absolutely, totally embrace that. But you won't be too surprised to hear that Republican leadership says, oh no, you can't get rid of Mueller because he's just such a fine man. So much integrity. You know, the same characters who just gave us that $1 trillion budget, you know, are now still defending Mueller. And I don't even understand how Chuck Grassley is saying, Senator Grassley, that it would be the end of the world if President Trump fired Mueller. I don't quite get that. I just don't understand it. There's a lot more to say. But you knew that, right? Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Okay, so the big question for any decision you're going to make, is this actually going to work? Well, if you've heard about MediShare, which is a brilliant way of sharing healthcare costs, you may have wondered that. Does it work? Well, so did Dr. Stuart Hoover, who initially joined to save a lot of money. The typical family saves about $500 a month. Stuart saved even more.
When we first joined MediShare, we were immediately going from a little over $1,600 a month down to $460 basically a month.
So that's wonderful, but then his wife needed emergency surgery and the bills added up to $160,000.
So we were seeing the bills coming in, and then the bills were being paid. Portions were being shared, and the end result of this is this bill was taken care of.
Yes, MediShare works, and it's so easy to get your questions answered too, so why not? You can call right now. 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23. 855-PSALM-23.
The influence of media is so very powerful over a person.
American Family Association and the family of Anna Bright want to warn you about the Netflix program 13 Reasons Why.
I really feel in my heart with all my soul that that show contributed to her passing.
After binge-watching season one of 13 Reasons Why, 14-year-old Anna Bright committed suicide in the same manner depicted on the show.
To portray suicide, first of all, as an option is not a good thing. To portray it graphically, it leaves you vulnerable to the enemy's attack, which I think it definitely did for our daughter.
She took a permanent solution to a temporary situation.
Help protect our teens by signing the AFA petition urging Netflix to pull season one and cancel the upcoming season two of 13 Reasons Why. You can see Anna's story and sign the petition at afa.net. That's afa.net.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Dr. Robert Bowen. I am the Dean of Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics, and I'm an Associate Professor of Physiology. So one of the benefits of being a faculty member at TMU is not only are we allowed to speak the gospel in the classroom and within our areas of discipline, we're encouraged to do so. Everybody needs to know the love of Christ. And so I try to incorporate in my classes, and one of the places that I incorporate in the most is in my office when I have students come in.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
There's been a lot of talk lately about the government regulating social media giants like Facebook. 60% of Americans say it's a good idea, according to a CBS News poll. Facebook admitted recently that the personal data of 87 million users was gathered without their consent. Look, it's no secret Facebook has been engaged in some shady behavior. They have a well-documented history of using algorithms to marginalize conservative content and Christian voices. I happen to be one of those voices. But I'm not sure regulation's the answer. As conservatives, we ought to be focused on shrinking government, not expanding it. Look, I'm grateful for the platform I have at Facebook, but I don't have a right to it. That's because I don't pay the bills. Mark Zuckerberg does. And if Zuckerberg really wants to make Facebook better, well, he could start by stopping the attacks on conservatives and getting rid of Candy Crush. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. A couple of things. I just have so much to tell you, but this is a good story. So let me start with a good story. And that is that the president hosted Alabama's Crimson Tide. I know many of you are familiar with Alabama's Crimson Tide, like the Roll Tide thing. I wouldn't know about it, except my husband was based in northern Alabama, his first assignment with the FBI. So I know a little bit about the Crimson Tide. So sorry, folks, I'm not a big sports person. But they won the NCAA National Championship. And the president spoke to them, and he said something like, "Each of you here today is here because of your grit and your drive, your dedication, and your incredible teamwork. Over the last several decades, America has learned that Alabama football knows how to win and how to keep winning. They just keep winning. It also takes a great coach and a great athletic director." And then he closed his remarks by saying, "Roll Tide." But what you didn't probably see was that before, I think it was after his remarks, several of the players came around the president, circled him, put their hands on his shoulder, and prayed for him. There's a video of it at SaturdayDownSouth.com. We're going to put this on our Facebook page. It's really amazing, and it's black and white players God does not care about race. We know that, but I have to say it. And so they're surrounding him, praying. And I just thought, how refreshing. I'm not sure exactly the timeline on this. This story came out yesterday, so I don't know if he met with them over the weekend. Maybe some of you Alabama fans know. I don't know if it happened Monday, but I just saw it this morning. And it's just pretty amazing at a time when I'm sure the president needs prayer. And I think the humility of him to just stand there, a man like him, to stand there and allow these guys to, this is not the first time this has happened. He has allowed people to pray over him publicly. Do you remember the prayer at Neil Gorsuch installation, whatever you call that, swearing in? It was a year ago yesterday, the Supreme Court nominee. There was a lot of prayer then. I'll never forget that. It was just open, just the discussions of God and Jesus. And that's one of the reasons why I think President Trump has changed. And certainly, I think God has used the coals he's been raked over, and certainly he's been raked over plenty of them, to sort of soften him. He's not as hard as he was. He's more humble. So, I'm praying for the best, and I'm just so grateful to those players for putting their politics aside, whatever they are, and praying for the President of the United States at such a crucial time, because he is dealing with some very big things. And by the way, he's getting ready to, of course, he's trying to decide what to do in Syria. And that's a very serious thing. Can you imagine if you today had to decide how to respond to a chemical weapons attack in another country across the world, and all the eyes were on you, and you feel this pressure to respond, but responding means that you know you're going to have to do something that's going to take life. I don't think that's a small thing, and I don't think this president considers it a small thing. So we need to pray for him. That's what he's dealing with, among many, many, many other things like North Korea and the southern border. And by the way, in regard to the border, that group of Central American migrants who formed that caravan, CNN is on the bus with them. And you should see the bus. The bus is a luxury bus. It's beautiful. I don't think I've ever been on a bus this pretty. But I digress. So the migrants who are seeking refuge and being filmed all the way along, who say they're boasting they're going to be invading. They don't say that. They say they're going to enter the U.S. no matter what. And so they're telling the CNN reporter, even after everything, even though the National Guard has been released to the border, that they're coming anyway. They're coming to America. They don't really care. The Arizona Supreme Court did something really interesting just a couple of days ago. They decided that Dreamers, so-called Dreamers, these people who are here illegally, are younger people working, who have been currently in Arizona and other states, border states, they've been given in-state tuition, and I think sometimes a whole lot more than that, but we'll just go with that for now. In-state tuition, the Arizona Supreme Court reversed that just this week, and they said no more. No in-state tuition for people who are here illegally. So that's a move, I think, in the right direction. It just is. We cannot prefer people who are not legally here to our own kids. Now, you just heard during the swap break a reminder of this campaign that we have started this week. Maybe this might be the most serious and compelling campaign AFA has been involved in a long time, and it has to do with the show on Netflix called 13 Reasons Why. Part of the movie, or the whatever series, focuses on the suicide of the lead character, a young girl. And so as a result of this sort of, some would say, glorifying of suicide, there are girls now who have taken their own lives and patterning after what happened on that series. And one of them was Anna Bright, 14 years old, whose parents, by the way, contacted AFA. We played a bit of their video yesterday. We put it on our Facebook page. But I want you to hear the second half of the video where our AFA writer explains a little bit more of the detail of how this happened. Let's listen.
To portray suicide, first of all, as an option is not a good thing. To portray it graphically, where you can actually see and get that image in your head, it leaves you vulnerable to the enemy's attack, which I think it definitely did for our daughter, and then causes suicide to look like an act of revenge, which it is not. it destroys your loved ones, not the people who are mistreated you or were unkind. We've even heard from friends that a text went around after Anna passed away that they were glad that she died. And those are not the people who care about you in the first place. I've heard it said that it's like a grenade, and the person who commits suicide is the one holding the grenade, so it destroys them completely. But the effect ripples out from there to the people closest to that person and devastates the people who loved that person the most.
Several months ago, the Bright family reached out to our ministry, the American Family Association, because they wanted to share their story with us about their 14-year-old daughter, Anna Bright, who committed suicide after watching the Netflix series 13 Reasons Why. The show is so harmful and had such an impact on their daughter that they really want to save lives and they really want to make a difference. There's no doubt in their minds that 13 Reasons Why led to the death of Anna, and they firmly believe that she would still be here today if it were not for her watching this show. They actually pulled the Netflix records, and it revealed that she watched the whole first season in one weekend, and for the next 2 weeks, it consumed her conversations, her text messages with her closest friend. And Anna appears to have staged her suicide after Hannah's, as it was depicted on the screen. The influence of media is so very powerful over a person. And there is a second season of 13 Reasons Why coming out soon. So the Bright family wants to get their message out, and they want us to help them get it out now.
Okay, so what happened as a result of that? And again, we'll put that video back on our Facebook page again. Let's do that, you guys, and link to AFA.net, because that's the site in which you can find more information about this. AFA is offering lots of different things. We're asking you to sign a petition, for one thing, to ask Netflix to stop this series. And for heaven's sake, don't produce the second year series on it, which they're in process right now. Our president, Tim Wildman, wrote a very respectful letter to the CEO of Netflix explaining what had happened, telling him about Anna. And there are two other girls who've killed themselves in the same circumstance. It certainly appears as a result of watching patterning after 13 Reasons Why. So Tim wrote this compelling letter to Reed Hastings, and the response? Nothing. No response whatsoever. Tim asked to meet with him, and he got no response. So we're asking you to help us, because I know lots of you watch Netflix, you're supporters, my husband and I certainly are also. We're asking you to sign this petition. We're also offering some resources to you that if you are in a situation that even resembles, in a remote way, this situation of Anna and her family, there are some resources at AFA.net. One of them is 13 Reasons Why and Its Unintended Consequences, which is a blog by a licensed clinical social worker whose name is Brooke Fox. Also a blog by Julie Howe that gives 13 reasons why life is worth living. And then a book by David Powlison called Grieving a Suicide, Help for the Aftershock. Then a mini book by Dave Powlison called I Just Want to Die, Replacing Suicidal Thoughts with Hope. And then the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, which is 1-800-273-8255, 1-800-273-8255. And then, of course, our petition, we're asking you to sign that. Now, it's AFA.net. Go to AFA.net, and please help us with this. Let's do something about this. You know, I'm just reading that suicide is the second highest cause of death among teenagers. Did you know that? I didn't know that, but actually it makes sense. You know, we are placing on our children knowledge and information and throwing them into situations that they are not prepared to deal with. Certainly in the area of sex, that's been the case for a number of years where kids are getting involved sexually and they just can't handle it. I remember when I was covering this topic more about like teen sex and abstinence, that young men are as prone to suicide over the heartbreak, over getting involved sexually with a girl who rejects them. Boys are just as affected by that as girls. And I can't give you the statistics, but I just remember that. And you certainly can see that. Tender, young, innocent boys getting involved sexually, then being disappointed, and then just wanting to kill themselves. And then girls, the same thing. Because they're too young to deal with all of the emotions and complications that come from a sexual encounter. That's just one thing. But that's not all we're throwing at the kids. We are putting them, just look at this David Hogg, treating them as though they are adults when they are not. They don't have the knowledge base. They don't have the emotional maturity. They can't handle what we are allowing them to sort of navigate in. Plus, we're sending them off to public schools, which have become cesspools of without values, like a ship that's rocking back and forth, and they don't know how to navigate that. And we're putting them out there every day with peers who come from very different families, whose, you know, minds are filled with perversion because of their upbringing, who it comes out of their mouths. The bathroom is often not even safe. And yet we let our kids go off, our young kids, we send them off to these schools because sometimes we don't have a choice. You know, mom and dad has to work. So we have to send them to public schools. It's just all that to say, you can understand why suicide is a big problem. But when you see this video of Anna Bright, she looks so young to me. How in the world could a girl that young and very innocent and on like the cusp of maturity be deluged with whatever it was that caused her to actually kill herself and get involved in this Netflix series and absorbed by it and overcome by it so that she should imitate the lead character and take her own life? It is just tragic. So we need your help. It's AFA.net, AFA.net, and we ask you to go to that and sign our petition. And I just can't imagine that any of you, I don't care what your politics are. You know, I know some of you listen and you have a very different view of the world than I do. And by the way, I appreciate your email. Lots of challenges, some insults. I don't mind that either, actually, because I have to then sort of sort through my own thoughts and I have to be able to defend my positions and certainly defend my fate. So I don't mind that. You make me think, and I'd like to do the same back to you. But surely on the issue of teen suicide, we can agree that we do not want this kind of atmosphere where kids, children are finding it better to take their lives and to live. It's just really unbearable, the thought of it. So go to AFA.net, AFA.net, and please let's join together and try to stop Netflix from producing another season of this. Let me also ask you to do something else. Next week is Share-a-thon, and you know, when we do Share-a-thon, we love to hear from you. We play listener testimonies all the time, and we would love to have yours. If you could call us at 877-876-8893, 877-876-8893. It will prompt you on what to do, and you can leave your testimonial, as it were, of what American Family Radio has meant to you, and then you are likely to hear yourself next week on Share-a-thon, 877-876-8893. Now, I want to go back to news. Yeah, the news. Let's do this. You know that Mark Zuckerberg testified before the Senate yesterday, don't you? Let's listen to Mike Emanuel as he kind of tells the story. And we may have to go past break just a little bit, Rob, because I talked a little bit. So just let's let that run out, then run the break, and we'll get out of the break. Okay? Here it goes.
We didn't take a broad enough view of our responsibility, and that was a big mistake. And it was my mistake. And I'm sorry.
The stakes are incredibly high for Mark Zuckerberg. Facebook has an estimated 2.2 billion users, and he's facing lawmakers for the first time after it was revealed 87 million users had their data unknowingly shared with Cambridge Analytica.
We considered it a closed case. In retrospect, that was clearly a mistake. We shouldn't have taken their word for it, and we've updated our policies and how we're going to operate the company to make sure that we don't make that mistake again.
Some senators warned Facebook better fix it, or Congress will.
Let me just cut to the chase. If you and other social media companies do not get your act in order, none of us are going to have any privacy anymore.
The line of questioning bounced around during the hearing as some Democrats focused on when Zuckerberg and his team knew about Russian attempts to influence the 2016 election.
The campaign included ads and false information to create discord and harm Secretary Clinton's campaign. And the content was seen by an estimated 157 million Americans.
Submit yourselves, therefore, to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. A Planned Parenthood-created sex education program was supposed to start at 9 Cumberland County, North Carolina middle schools, until the parents there stood against it. The program included discussions on sexual preference, gender identity, and the myths and facts about your sexuality. Not to mention, it also included condom usage demonstrations. But the North Carolina parents said, not on our watch. One father said, this is not appropriate for 12-year-olds. Thanks for the reminder, North Carolina. Schools do not own our children.
Listen to the Hamilton Corner, weekdays from 5 to 6 p.m. Central on AFR. For more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association. Come join Sandy Rios for a walk back in time when she was a young grieving mom, discovering firsthand how God's strength is made perfect in weakness.
I'll be the song for you. I'll be the symphony.
The music of Sasha's Song, Sandy Rios' first album project, is a reminder of God's faithfulness.
Would God sustain us through the years?
Produced by John Ennis of the Billy Graham Crusade with members of the Indianapolis Orchestra, this beautiful music will lift your heart.
Like peering through a window blurred with rain, emotions run together in the flood. Doubt and pain, for he is able.
Available on CD at afastore.net.
Hi, this is Abraham Hamilton III, and it really blows me away to hear how God is using the Hamilton Corner and all the other programs on American Family Radio. He's doing an amazing work here. That's why I'm glad to have an opportunity to ask you to partner with us financially during our three-day share-a-thon starting Tuesday, April 17th.
My name is Amy. Blessings from Minnesota. When other people talk about eating their morning coffee, I just say I need my daily dose of the Holy Ghost, and that's AFR for me. You guys are amazing. I'm blessed daily. I love being informed, and I love to know how to pray.
God is using American Family Radio to inform, equip, and activate our listeners to strengthen the moral foundations of American culture. Please partner with us in this important effort during our three-day share-a-thon beginning Tuesday, April 17th.
Thank you for being there for me every day. God bless everybody.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. President Trump wants to punish Bashar Assad's regime for its alleged role in the latest murderous chemical weapons attack against Syrian civilians. The temptation is to lash out with more tactical retaliation against military targets implicated in such operations. If successful, that would convey resolve and impose costs. The trouble is that, like the response itself, the signals thus sent, let alone the effects, are likely to be very short-lived. Assad and his Russian, Iranian, Hezbollah, and Turkish partners will discount such attacks and perhaps even be emboldened by them. What is clearly required is a broader, more strategic, and enduring response. That could be conveyed by three initiatives. First, provide military and political assistance to the Kurds in the region. Second, support Israel as it defends its vital interests and ours in Syria. Third, treat Turkey as an ally no more. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
If you'd like, I can have my team follow up with you after this. I'm happy to have my team follow up with you on more information if that would be helpful. Senator, I have not heard that. Mr. Chairman, I will have my team follow up with you on what information we have. Senator, I don't know. I do not know. We can follow up.
Okay, do that.
I can certainly have my team get back to you on any specifics there that I don't know sitting here today. I'm not, but let me just...
How about moveon.org?
Sorry, I'm not familiar with those specific cases.
Will you find out the answer and get back to me?
I'll have my team get back to you. I'm not specifically aware of those.
How about cases. Any Democratic candidate for office?
I am not familiar with those pieces of content specifically. I want to have my team follow up with you on that afterwards. Senator, I want to make sure I get this accurate, so it would probably be better to have my team follow up.
So you don't know?
I'm not sure the answer to that question.
Really?
Yes. Senator, I don't know that we've had specific conversations around that. Senator, I'm not actually sure I understand this enough to speak to that specific point. I'm not specifically aware. I mean, I'm not sure. Senator, I look forward to having my team follow up to flesh out the details of it. Senator, I do not know that. I do not know. We can follow up.
Okay, do that.
I'm not familiar with those specific cases. I don't know when we changed it.
Okay, all right, I'm going to interrupt it. It goes on and on. But that's kind of what you heard if you listened to Mark Zuckerberg testify yesterday before the Senate Judiciary Committee. But in all fairness to him, he testified for, what, nearly 5 hours, something like 5 hours, and dozens of senators questioned him. And I think the thing that came across to me, I didn't hear all of it. I actually heard maybe an hour of it, was that the senators didn't know what they were talking about. They didn't ask hard questions. They didn't mostly. They do what they always do. They try to make a statement that gets them some attention and some news. That's what they do. This is their opportunity to be important. And so that's kind of what happened. It's interesting. A reporter caught the hearing room before Zuckerberg came in to speak, and there was a big, like, cushion, high cushion in his chair to make him taller. That is the probably the most amusing point of the day. The rest of it's not so amusing. So 5 hours, he wasn't grilled. That would be a joke. He wasn't grilled by hardly anyone. There were a few good exchanges. One of the points that the Democrats tried to make over and over again, which is what Mark Zuckerberg's been trying to make, is that Cambridge Analytica, the company that was founded by the Mercers, in part, who are the billionaire backers of first Ted Cruz and then Donald Trump, the Cambridge Analytica, based in Great Britain, somehow illegally obtained all of this information from Facebook followers. In fact, Facebook sent out a message, I think, to 80 million users telling them their information had been breached because you see that really big bad Donald Trump and his big bad followers took your information and used it. And I'm so ashamed of myself for allowing that to happen. I just can't believe this is kind of the line of thought. Have you, Cambridge Analytica, have you done something about that? Well, they have banned Cambridge Analytica, which makes its bones, you know, trying to analyze elections. They have banned them from Facebook. But you would think that that was the only time that information that people put on their Facebook pages had been shared with any kind of campaign, right? You just kind of think that. But really, you know, not so. There couldn't be a bigger lie. Carol Davidson, I don't know what year she made this speech. This was in the news a couple of weeks ago. But it's worth revisiting. She worked with the Obama campaign, and she was bragging in a speech about how much cooperation they had from Facebook. Let me let you hear just a little bit of it. Here it is.
Facebook, 2012 election, had the ability for people to opt in. The Obama campaign, like, rocked this, right? We got people to opt in, and the privacy policies at that time on Facebook were that if they opted in, they could tell us who all their friends were. Okay, so they told us who all their friends were. This is very much how local campaigns work, right? People sit in a room, it's a really small thing, all of their biggest supporters sit around the table and they like circle the names of the people that they know and that they're gonna outreach to, and they figure out how to fill in the gaps of the people that they don't know. The Obama campaign just did this on a digital level, on a much larger level, but we were actually able to ingest the entire social network of the US that's on Facebook, which is most people. It freaks Facebook out, right? So they shut off the feature. Well, the Republicans never built an app to do that. So the data's out there. You can't take it back, right? So the Democrats have this information. So when they look at a voter file and someone comes to them, they can immediately be like, oh, here are all the other people that they know, and here are people that they can help us persuade because they're really good friends with this person. The Republicans do not have that information and will not get that information, right? Now there's a disadvantage of information that to me seems unfair, but I'm not Facebook, so this is the realities.
Carol Davidson, former Obama campaign advisor. I'm sure you caught that, right? So the Democrats, certainly in 2012, had access not to 80 million American Facebook users, but to every American Facebook user, 100%. All of their data, everything through an app. And then you heard her say clearly the Republicans didn't have that. Well, so Cambridge Analytica was, I don't know what year they started, but I know that the Cruz campaign got involved with them early on because they recognized how weak and ineffective the Republican database was. I remember, listen, Trust me. I've been in meetings when I've heard Republican leaders brag about how wonderful their database was. This was before the 2016 election. But the Cruz people recognized that wasn't the case. He had some very smart people working with him. And so they went their own way, and they accessed Cambridge Analytica through, I guess, I'm guessing, through the Mercers. And so they had very, as far as I know, Facebook was doing what Facebook does. Now, Zuckerberg claimed yesterday they didn't make any profit from selling information. Oh, no. But, you know, something is rotten in Denmark, because we know the political leanings of Facebook, and no one laid it out any better yesterday. Trust me, no one did. No one came close. They were all pathetic, really pathetic. It was embarrassing to listen. You wonder why this nation is in trouble? You should listen to your senators speak. You should just listen to them, and you would know. And you'd say to yourself, why did we elect that person who seems to not be aware of anything, who doesn't know hardly anything, can only read a statement written by their staffers in their 20s? That's basically the way it goes. You see them reading statements? Trust me, it's somebody who's like 25 writing those statements. 30 is old on Capitol Hill. But that's a sidebar. I want you to hear Senator Ted Cruz. He gave the only real meaningful interaction with Mark Zuckerberg yesterday. Let's listen.
Mr. Zuckerberg, does Facebook consider itself a neutral public forum?
Senator, we consider ourselves to be a platform for all ideas.
Let me ask the question again. Does Facebook consider itself to be a neutral public forum? And representatives of your company have given conflicting answers on this. Are you a First Amendment speaker expressing your views, or are you a neutral public forum allowing everyone to speak?
Senator, here's how we think about this. I don't believe that there is certain content that clearly we do not allow, right? Hate speech, terrorist content, nudity, anything that makes people feel unsafe in the community. From that perspective, that's why we generally try to refer to what we do as a platform for all ideas.
Let me try, just because the time is constrained. It's just a simple question. The predicate for Section 230 immunity under the CDA is that you are a neutral public forum. Do you consider yourself a neutral public forum, or are you engaged in political speech, which is your right under the First Amendment?
Well, Senator, our goal is certainly not to engage in political speech. I'm not that familiar with the specific legal language of the law that you speak to, so I would need to follow up with you on that. I'm just trying to lay out how broadly I think about this.
Well, Mr. Zuckerberg, I will say there are a great many Americans who I think are deeply concerned that Facebook and other tech companies are engaged in a pervasive pattern of bias and political censorship.
That's part one, but he goes on. Let's listen.
There have been numerous instances with Facebook. In May of 2016, Gizmodo reported that Facebook had purposely and routinely suppressed conservative stories from trending news, including stories about CPAC, including stories about Mitt Romney, including stories about the Lois Lerner IRS scandal, including stories about Glenn Beck. In addition to that, Facebook has initially shut down the Chick-fil-A Appreciation Day page, has blocked a post of a Fox News reporter, has blocked over two dozen Catholic pages, and most recently blocked Trump supporters' Diamond and Silks page with 1.2 million Facebook followers after determining their content and brand were, quote, unsafe to the community. To a great many Americans, that appears to be a pervasive pattern of political bias. Do you agree with that assessment?
Senator, let me say a few things about this. First, I understand where that concern is coming from, because Facebook and the tech industry are located in Silicon Valley, which is an extremely left-leaning place. And this is actually a concern that I have and that I try to root out in the company, is making sure that we don't have any bias in the work that we do. And I think it is a fair concern that that people would at least wonder about.
Let me ask this now, question. Are you aware of any ad or page that has been taken down from Planned Parenthood?
Senator, I'm not, but let me just...
How about moveon.org?
Sorry?
How about moveon.org?
I'm not specifically aware of those.
How about any Democratic candidate for office?
I'm not specifically aware. I mean, I'm not sure.
And I want you to hear the last interaction, because it's worth it. Ted Cruz grilling Mark Zuckerberg. Listen.
In your testimony, you say that you have 15 to 20,000 people working on security and content review. Do you know the political orientation of those 15 to 20,000 people engaged in content review?
No, Senator. We do not generally ask people about their political orientation when they're joining the company.
So as CEO, have you ever made hiring or firing decisions based on political positions or what candidates they supported?
No.
Why was Palmer Luckey fired?
That is a specific personnel matter that seems like it would be inappropriate to
speak. You just made a specific representation that you didn't make decisions based on political views.
Well,
is that accurate?
I can commit that it was not because of a political view.
Do you know of those 15 to 20,000 people engaged in content review, how many, if any, have ever supported financially a Republican candidate for office?
Senator, I do not know that.
Your testimony says it is not enough that we just connect people. We have to make sure those connections are positive. It says we have to make sure people aren't using their voice to hurt people or spread misinformation. We have a responsibility not just to build tools, to make sure those tools are used for good. Mr. Zuckerberg, do you feel it's your responsibility to assess users, whether they are good and positive connections or ones that those 15 to 20,000 people deem unacceptable or deplorable?
Senator, you're asking about me personally?
Facebook.
Senator, I think that there are a number of things that we would all agree are clearly bad. Foreign interference in our elections, terrorism, self-harm.
I'm talking about censorship.
I think that you would probably agree that we should remove terrorist propaganda from the service. So that, I think is clearly bad activity that we want to get down, and we're generally proud of how well we do at that. Now, what I can say, and I do want to get this in before the end here, is that I'm very committed to making sure that Facebook is a platform for all ideas. That is a very important founding principle of what we do. We're proud of the discourse and the different ideas that people can share on the service. And that is something that, as long as I'm running the company, I'm going to be committed to making sure is the case.
Yeah, really? You know, as I've said many, many times before, look at what a man does, not what he says. Look at what he does. Palmer Luckey, Senator Cruz just mentioned, was the founder of Oculus VR, which was later bought by Facebook. Palmer was a conservative, and after he went to work for Facebook, he was fired in due course, and he spoke out about his conservative beliefs. But, of course, Zuckerberg just told you he's really concerned that all different points of view are expressed. I suppose that's why they changed their algorithms in January, and now suddenly, voila, CNN has gone up 30%. In terms of the number of people posting and seeing their information, and other conservative outlets like Breitbart, Ben Shapiro's outlet, have just sunk as a result of the change in their algorithms. But I'm sure that's an accident. And by the way, Mark Zuckerberg made out pretty well yesterday. The stocks of Facebook surged 4% just while he was talking to Congress. And interestingly enough, Facebook is a huge contributor to many of the people that were questioning him on Capitol Hill yesterday. The breakdown is found in USA Today. I don't have time to get into that right now. But it was really interesting to me. And also, speaking of Cruz, Representative O'Rourke, who is challenging Texas Senator Cruz for his seat, is the fourth highest recipient of contributions tied to Facebook. In this election cycle, he's received nearly 13,000. That's for a local race. That's the fourth highest for Facebook. But they don't have an opinion on politics, you know. No. They're neutral. They would never do anything to, you know, show favoritism. You know, I have to just say this quickly. There's no way in the world we should allow a company like Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg, to determine content. It should be a utility used by everyone equally, except for threats. Otherwise, no restrictions. Sandy Rios in the morning.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.